Phantom Doubleday Dell Audio Publishing presents Star Wars, The Truce at Bakura by Kathy Tyers. Above a dead world, one habitable moon hung suspended like a cloud-veiled turquoise. The eternal hand that held the chain of its orbit had dusted its velvet backdrop with brilliant stars, and cosmic energies danced on the wrinkles of space-time, singing their timeless music, neither noticing nor caring for the Empire, the Rebel Alliance, or their brief, petty wars. But on that petty, human scale of perspective, a fleet of starships orbited the moon's primary. Carbon streaks scored the sides of several ships. Droids swarmed around some, performing repairs. Metal shards that had been critical spaceship components, and human and alien bodies, orbited with the ships. The battle to destroy Emperor Palpatine's second Death Star had cost the Rebel Alliance heavily. Luke Skywalker hustled across one cruiser's landing bay, red-eyed but still suffused with victory after the Ewok celebration. He ached, a dull gnawing in all his bones from the longest day of his life. Today, no, it was yesterday, he had met the Emperor. Yesterday he had almost paid with his life for his faith in his father. Yet a passenger sharing his shuttle up to the cruiser from the Ewok village had already asked if Luke had really killed the Emperor and Darth Vader single-handed. Luke wasn't ready to announce the fact that Darth Vader had been Anakin Skywalker, his father. Still, he'd answered firmly, Vader killed Emperor Palpatine. Vader had flung him into the second Death Star core. Luke would be explaining that for weeks, he guessed. For now, he merely wanted to check on his X-Wing. To his surprise, it was overrun by service crew. Behind and above it, a Magna Crane lowered R2-D2 into the cylindrical droid socket behind his cockpit. What's up? Luke asked. Oh, sir, answered a khaki-suited crewman, disengaging a collapsible fuel hose. Your relief pilot's going out. Captain Antilles came back on the first shuttle and went out on patrol immediately. He intercepted an Imperial drone ship, one of those antiques they used for carrying messages back before the Clone Wars, incoming from deep space. Incoming. Someone had sent a message to the Emperor. Luke smiled. Guess they haven't heard yet. Wedge wants company? Well, I'm not that tired. I could go. Wedge Antilles had been his friend since the days of the first Death Star, when they'd flown in the final attack together. The crewman didn't smile back. Unfortunately, Captain Antilles touched off a self-destruct cycle while trying to release its message codes. He's manually blocking a critical gap. Cancel the relief pilot, Luke exclaimed. Through the Force, Luke quested outward and found Wedge's presence. His hands moved on the X-Wing's controls almost effortlessly as he steered toward that end of the fleet. Wedge, do you copy? Luke asked over the subspace radio.
Sorry, almost out of range of my ship's pickup. You see, I've got to keep these two crystals apart. It's a self-destruct of some sort.
Crystals?
Electrite crystal leads. The mechanism's trying to push them together. Let them touch. Poof. The whole fusion engine.
Tumbling slowly above the blue glimmer of Endor, Luke spotted Wedge's X-Wing. Alongside it drifted a 9-meter-long cylinder bearing Imperial markings, fully as long as the X-Wing and almost all engine, a type of drone ship the Alliance still couldn't afford. For some reason, the drone filled him with foreboding. The Empire never used such antiques anymore for sending messages. Why hadn't the sender been able to use standard Imperial channels? Wedge clung to one end of the cylinder, connected to the X-Wing by a life support tether. He must have blown his cockpit air and dove for the cylinder's master control the moment he realized he'd accidentally armed it to detonate. Even in his pressure suit and closed-face emergency helmet, he couldn't survive vacuum long. Closing in, Luke reversed engines with care. Wedge held one hand inside a hinged panel. That hand must be half-crushed. Luke frowned. Sweat trickled on his forehead. If he didn't hurry, his friend was dead. Already, Wedge's sense in the force wobbled dizzily. Cautiously, Luke slipped his lightsaber into the flare ejection port's feed tube. He launched it out, then extended a hand toward it across 10 meters of vacuum. He sent it gliding toward Wedge. As it neared the target, he twisted his wrist. The green-white blade appeared, silent in the vacuum of space. Wedge's wide brown eyes blinked inside his faceplate. On my signal, jump free.
Luke, I'll lose fingers.
Way free, Luke repeated. You'll lose more than fingers if you stay there. At moments like these, moisture farming for Uncle Owen back on Tatooine didn't sound too bad. Show me the crystals, said Luke. Look at them closely.
Okay.
Wedge pulled around to stare into the hatchway. Letting the lightsaber drift, Luke felt for Wedge's friendly presence. Through Wedge's eyes and fighting the excruciating pain in Wedge's hand, Luke glimpsed a pair of round, multifaceted jewels, one inside his palm, the other crushing inward at the end of a spring mechanism from the back of his hand. Fist-sized, the jewels reflected pale, golden sparks of saber light out the hatch onto Wedge's orange suit. If Wedge jumped, Luke would have a second at most to slice one crystal free, and only a little longer before Wedge fainted. Jump on the count of three. Jump hard. One, Luke said. Wedge didn't object. Clenching his teeth, Luke eased into a closer accord with the saber. So long as he focused on the saber, he could maintain control. Two, keeping up a steady count, he felt the saber, the crystals, and the critical gap, all as parts of the universe's wholeness. Three, nothing happened. Jump, Wedge! Weakly, Wedge launched himself. Luke swept in, one crystal soared free, reflecting a whirling green kaleidoscope onto the X-Wing's upper S-foil. Wedge's body rose and sank with each breath as he floated upright in the fleet's clear tank of healing Bacta fluid. Much to Luke's relief, they'd saved all his fingers. A surgical droid named 2-1B had run tests on Luke himself and pronounced a diagnosis of sudden and massive calcification of his structure, of the rare type brought on by severely conductive exposure to electrical and other energy fields. Yesterday, Luke realized, Emperor Palpatine leering as blue-white sparks leapt off his fingertips. Luke had thought he was dying. He was dying. The surgical droid had urged him to rest, but Luke was eager to get to the war room and find out if the drone ship's message had been decoded yet. Besides, his pain had been worse when he'd lost his right hand. Come to think of it, the bionic hand didn't ache. Some bright spot. Large enough to hold 100, the flagship's war room was almost empty. A service droid slid along the curve of an inner bench, passing between a light tube and glimmering white bulkheads. Down near the circular projection table that dominated the war room center, near a single tech on duty, Mon Mothma, the woman who'd founded and who now led the Rebel Alliance, stood with General Crix Medin. Mon Mothma's presence gleamed visibly in her long white robes and invisibly through the Force, and the bearded Medin's confidence had grown since the battle for Endor. They both looked in Luke's direction and frowned. Luke smiled half-heartedly and gripped the handrests of the repulsor chair he'd commandeered out of the medical suite, steering it down the steps toward them.
"You'll never learn, will you?"
General Medin's frown got flatter.
"You belong in sick bay. This time we'll have 2-1B knock you out."
Luke's cheek twitched. "Well, what about that message? Some Imperial commander burned 250,000 credits on that antique drone." A small light projection table at the side lit up, and above it appeared a miniature hologram of Admiral Akbar, with huge eyes bulging at the sides of his high-domed ruddy head. Although the Mon Calamarian had commanded the battle for Endor from a chair under the broad starry viewport on Luke's left, Admiral Akbar felt more comfortable on his own cruiser. Life support there was fine-tuned to Calamarian standard.
"Commander Skywalker, you need to consider the risks you take more carefully."
"I will, Admiral, when I can." R2-D2 wasn't letting Luke out of photoreceptor range for 30 seconds. The blue-domed droid rolled along the upper computer bank to a drop platform. There he downloaded himself, then rolled close to Luke's float chair. R2's rebukes were probably coming straight from 2-1B. General Medin smirked behind his beard. Luke hadn't understood a single whistle, but he could guess. All right, R2, pull in your wheels. Young Lieutenant Matthews straightened up over the side of the console. Here it comes, he announced. The decoded message was just coming through.
Imperial Governor Wylik Nereus of the Bakura system to his most excellent Imperial Master, Palpatine. Greetings in haste.
They hadn't heard. Months, maybe years, would pass before much of the galaxy realized that the Emperor's reign had ended.
Bakura is under attack by an alien invasion force from outside your domain. Urgent, repeat, urgent. Send stormtroopers.
Mon Mothma turned to a shoulder-high droid that stood silently nearby. Access the embedded data files. Apply our most recent Imperial codes. Locate this world, Bakura. Star sparks appeared in a confirmation Luke recognized.
Here, madam,
the droid announced. One speck turned red.
That's virtually the edge of the rim worlds, Luke observed.
From a speaker at Luke's left, Leia's voice projected clearly.
How large is the Imperial force at the system?
Leia was down on Endor's surface in the Ewok village. Luke hadn't known she was listening in, but he should have assumed it. She was allegedly resting with Han Solo, recovering from that blaster burn on her shoulder and helping the furry little Ewoks bury their dead, not watching for new trouble. The intelligence droid answered her.
Bakura is defended by an Imperial garrison. The sender of this message has added subtext, reminding Emperor Palpatine that what forces they have are antiquated due to the system's remoteness.
Evidently, the Empire didn't anticipate any competition for Bakura.
Leia's voice sounded disdainful.
But now, by the time the Imperials reassemble, Bakura could fall to the invasion force. Or it could be part of the Alliance. If the Imperials can't help the Bakurans, we must.
Admiral Akbar's image planted finny hands in the vicinity of its lower torso.
What do you mean, Your Highness?
Leia leaned against the wattle and daub wall of an Ewok treehouse and rolled her eyes toward the dome of its high thatched roof. Han sprawled casually beside her, leaning on an elbow and twirling a twig between his fingers. She raised a handheld comlink.
If we send aid to Bakura, she answered Admiral Akbar, it's possible that Bakura would leave the Empire out of gratitude. That chance is worth investing a small task force, and you'll need a high-ranked negotiator.
Han lay back, crossed his arms behind his head, and murmured, You step off into an Imperial world, and you're an entry in somebody's credit register. You got a price on your head. She frowned.
Can we afford to send troops, given the shape we're in? We've lost 20% of our forces, battling only part of the Emperor's fleet. Any Imperial battle group could do a better job at Bakura.
But then the Empire would remain in control there.
Surprising her, Han pulled the comlink toward him.
Admiral, I doubt we can afford not to go. An invasion force that big is trouble for this whole end of the galaxy. And she's right. It's us that ought to go. You just better send a ship that can make a fast getaway in case the Imperials get ideas.
What about the price on your head, laser brains?
Leia whispered.
You're not going without me, Highnessness.
That night, Luke dreamed. He sprawled on the deck of a strange spaceship, a huge reptilian alien, brown scale, with a blunt, oversized head trumped toward him, waving a weapon. Luke ignited his lightsaber. Heavy with the Emperor's fingerprints, it slid through his grip. Then he recognized the big lizard's weapon, a restraining bolt owner, used to control droids.
What? Disbelieving, he looked down. He had a droid, stiff-jointed body.
Luke fought back to consciousness. He felt a powerful presence in the Force. On the foot of his flotation bed sat Ben Kenobi, robed as usual in unbleached homespun.
Obi-Wan?
Luke murmured.
What's happening at Bakura?
Ionized air danced around the figure.
Emperor Palpatine achieved first contact with the aliens attacking Bakura. During one of his Force meditations, he offered them a deal, one that can no longer be honored.
What kind of deal? What danger are the Bakurans in?
You must go. If you do not attend to the matter, personally, Duke, Bakura, and all the worlds, both allied and imperial, will know a far greater disaster than you can imagine.
Shimmering air brightened and rushed inward, stirring faint air currents as the image vanished.
So, you see... Luke glanced up. The clinic lounge's door slid open. Han and Leia paused in the hatchway, then squeezed in between General Medine, who stood nearby, and Mon Mothma, seated on a stasis unit.
Excuse us,
Han grunted, and backed up against the bulkhead. Leia sat down beside Mon Mothma.
Admiral Akbar's projected image shone on the floor beside R2, who stood at attention maintaining the projection.
General Obi-Wan Kenobi has given you orders?
That's it, sir.
But you are in serious condition, Commander Skywalker.
I won't be by the time we reach Bakura.
Then we shall send Bakura a small but strong strike force to support Princess Leia in her role as chief negotiator. 5 Corellian gunships and a corvette will escort our smallest fighter carrier. Commander Skywalker, will that be enough?
Luke started. You're giving me command, sir?
I don't see that we have any choice, Mon Mothma said quietly.
Elated by the honor, Luke saluted her.
Early the following day, Luke examined the status boards of the newly commissioned rebel carrier, Flurry.
She's ready to jump, he observed.
Ready and eager, Commander.
Captain Tessa Manchisco nudged his elbow. Fresh from the Virgilian Civil War, Captain Manchisco wore her black hair hanging in 6 thick braids down the back of her cream-colored uniform. Her Flurry, a small, unconventional cruiser carrier, retrofitted with all the stolen Imperial components that opportunistic Virgilians could cram on board, carried a Virgilian bridge crew. Besides Manchisco, 3 humans and a noseless, red-eyed Duro navigator. Inside the Flurry's hangar bays, Admiral Akbar's crews had packed 20 X-Wing fighters, 3 A-Wings, and 4 Cruiser Assault B-Wing fighters, as many as the Alliance could spare. Riding shotgun above the cruiser, drifted Han's souped-up freighter, the Millennium Falcon. Han, Chewbacca, Leia, and C-3PO, who had returned from Endor as soon as the expedition was approved, were already on board. Luke's initial elation over being given command had already faded. It was one thing to fly a fighter under someone else's orders with the Force as his ally. He now carried responsibility for every life and every ship. On an outer deck of a vast battlecruiser called the Shriwer, Deb Ciwara rested his slim brown hand on a prisoner's left shoulder.
It'll be all right, he said softly.
The other human's fear beat at his mind like a 3-tailed lash.
There's no pain. You have a wonderful surprise ahead of you.
Wonderful indeed, a life without hunger, cold, or selfish desire. The prisoner, an Imperial of much lighter complexion than Dev's, slumped in the entechment chair. He'd given up protesting, and his breath came in gasps. Pliable bands secured his forelimbs, neck, and knees, but only for balance. With his nervous system deionized at the shoulders, he couldn't struggle. A slender intravenous tube dripped pale blue magnetizing solution into each of his carotid arteries while tiny servo pumps hummed. It took only a few mils of magsol to attune the tiny fluctuating electromagnetic fields of human brain waves to the Siruk entechment apparatus. Behind Dev, Master Fear Wurong trilled a question in Siruvi.
Is it calm yet?
Dev switched from human speech to Siruvi. Dev sang back, "Come enough. He's almost ready." Sleek russet scales protected Fear Wurung's 2-meter length from beaked muzzle to muscular tail tip, and a prominent black V crest marked his forehead. He swung a broad, glowing white metal catchment arc down to cover the prisoner from mid-chest to nose. Dev could just peer over it and watch the man's pupils dilate. At any moment...
Now, Dev announced.
Fear Wurung touched a control. His muscular tail twitched with pleasure. The fleet's capture had been good today. Alongside his master, Dev would work far into the night. Before entechment, prisoners were noisy and dangerous. Afterward, their life energies powered droids of Siruvi choosing. The catchment arc hummed up to pitch. Dev backed away. Inside that round human skull, a magsol-drugged brain was losing control. though Master Fear Wurong assured him that the transfer of incorporeal energy was painless, every prisoner screamed. As did this one, when Fear Wurong threw the catchment arc switch. The arc boomed out a sympathetic vibration as brain energy leapt to an electromagnet perfectly attuned to Magsol. Through the force rippled a ululation of indescribable anguish. Dev staggered and clung to the knowledge his masters had given him. The prisoners only thought they felt pain. He only thought he sensed their pain. By the time that he screamed, all of the subject's energies had leapt to the catchment arc. The screaming body already was dead.
Transferred.
Fear Wurong's fluting whistle carried an amused undercurrent. Such a paternal attitude made Dev feel awkward. He was inferior, human, soft and vulnerable like a wriggling white larva before metamorphosis. He longed to sit for entechment and transfer his life energy to a powerful battle droid. Quietly, he cursed the talents that sentenced him to go on waiting. The catchment arc hummed louder, fully charged, more alive now than the limp body on the chair. Fear Wurong faced a bulkhead stippled with hexagonal metal scales.
Ready down there?
His question came out as a rising labial whistle, ending with a snap of the toothed beak, then two sibilant whistles falling to throat stop. It had taken Dev years to master Shiruvi, and countless sessions of hypnotic conditioning that also left him yearning to please Fear Wurong. Deck 16 of the huge battle cruiser finally whistled an answer. Fear Wurong pressed his three-fingered foreclaw against a button. The catchment arc fell silent. The lucky human's life energy was even now sparking in a reservoir coil behind one small pyramidal battle droid's sensor clusters. Two small young Poeks, who looked like smaller versions of the masterly Siruk, brought in the next prisoner, a wrinkled human who struggled to wrench his arms out of his guard's foreclaws. If only he knew how unnecessary all this resistance was. Dev stepped forward. He helped the two Poeks, and Fear Wurong positioned the smelly, perspiring human on the chair.
Relax, murmured Dev. It'll be all right. There's no pain. You have a wonderful surprise ahead of you.
At last, all the day's prisoners were safely intact. Fear Wurong led Dev back up spacious corridors to their quarters and poured soothing kasa for both of them. Dev drank gratefully, seated in the circular cabin's only chair. Siruk needed no furniture. Hissing contentment, Fear Wurong settled his broad tail and hindquarters comfortably onto the warm gray deck.
Are you happy, Dev?
Liquid black eyes blinked over the kasa mug and reflected the bitter red tonic. It was an offer of solace. Whenever life saddened Dev, whenever he missed the sense of wholeness he'd had when his mother force-linked with him, Fear Wurong took him to blue-scaled Elder Shtkith for renewal therapy.
Very happy, Dev answered truthfully. A good day's work. Much kindness.
Fear Wurung's scent tongues flicked out of his nostrils, taste-smelling Dev's presence.
Stretch out, Dev. What do you see tonight in the hidden universe?
All Siruk were force-blind. Through Dev, who had been trained in the force by his mother back on Chandrila, the Siruk had learned of the Emperor's death moments after it happened. Because the force existed in all life, Dev had felt the shockwave of power ripple through spirit and space. Dev shook his head and answered, Outside, I sense only the quiet winds of life itself. Months ago, his potency, the Shriftut, had responded immediately when Emperor Palpatine offered prisoners in exchange for tiny 2-meter droid fighters of his own. Palpatine couldn't have known how many dozen million Siruk lived on Hwek in their distant star cluster. Quickly, Admiral Ifpikis captured and questioned several Imperial citizens. This human empire, they learned, stretched out for parsecs. Its star systems lay like nesting sands, fertile for the planting of Siruvi life. But then the Emperor died. There would be no bargain. The traitorous human had abandoned them to get home as best they could, with the fleet's energy almost spent. Admiral Ifpikis had come ahead with the battlecruiser Shriwur and a small advance force. The main fleet hung back, waiting for news of success or failure. If they could take a major human world, the Intekment equipment, Master Fiwurung's domain, would give them the human empire. Bakura, when it fell, would provide the technology to construct dozens of entechment chairs. Each intect Bakuran would power or shield a battle droid fighter or vitalize some critical ship component on one of the large cruisers. With dozens of entechment teams trained and equipped, the Saruvi fleet could take the humans' populous core worlds. There were a dozen thousand planets to liberate. So much kindness to accomplish. Star Street shrank on Luke's triangular forward view screen as the Flurry and her escorts dropped out of hyperspace into the Bakuran system. Once he'd checked deflector shields, he swung his chair to get the master computer's in-system status report while Captain Manchisco's communications officer scanned standard Imperial hailing frequencies. Having spent the voyage in hyperspace making use of Yoda's sketchy lessons in the ancient Jedi art of self-healing, Luke felt better, so long as he moved slowly. Scanners showed 8 planets. The alien ships, half a dozen ovoids covered with blister-like projections, clustered around the system's third world, surrounded on his screens by a virtual sandstorm of small fighters. They all gleamed red for threat, but they weren't all on the same side. Some were Imperials. The Virgilian communications man made contact with the lead Imperial ship. Luke cleared his throat. Before they left Endor, Leia had offered a list of things he might say. They just weren't style. Besides, he wouldn't be dealing with a diplomat or a politician. This was an embattled commander who could spare only seconds for each decision. Imperial Navy, Luke said. This is an alliance battle group. We have the white flag out for you. Looks like you're in need. Would you accept our help as between fellow humans? Sure, there were aliens among the rebels, besides Chewbacca and Luke's Duro-Navigator. One gunship was crewed by 17 Mon Calamari, but the human chauvinist Imperials didn't need to know yet. Musical fragments and garbled voices echoed across the Flurry's bridge, and then...
Alliance Battle Group, this is Commander Peter Thanis of the Imperial Navy. Declare your purpose here.
We intercepted a message Governor Nereus sent to the Imperial fleet. It sounded like serious trouble. As I said, we came to help.
Alliance Battle Group, we would be grateful for assistance. I am coding a status report 20 cycles below this frequency.
Only someone who already considered himself beaten would accept marginally identified reinforcements. Luke glanced at his communications officer, who opened the channel Thanis indicated. Within moments, a small percentage of the swirling dots on the status board turned yellow gold for the Imperials. Luke whistled softly. All 6 ovoids and most of the sandstorm still gleamed threat red. The Battle Analysis Computer, or BAC, started spitting information. Commander Thanis had less firepower than the invaders, and 80% of it was concentrated in a single Carrick-class cruiser, the Dominant. Not a big ship, with only a fifth of the crew that a Star Destroyer carried, but it outgunned the Flurry several times. Reading your formation, Luke told his Imperial counterpart.
If you could throw a cone of ships into the gap between those 3 central Siruk cruisers, it could inspire them to retreat. It would buy us time.
Siruk... Luke filed the alien's name at the back of his mind. Commander Thanis, we're going to sweep down from Solar North, just spinward of those 3 cruisers. Set course, he murmured aside. Luke felt the Flurry's engine vibrations. The access hatch, which they'd left open for ventilation, slid shut.
What do you think, kid?
Han's voice filtered through the speaker at Luke's elbow.
It doesn't look good.
I've got to get to Bakura.
Leia insisted over the same speaker.
I have to convince this Governor Nereus to declare an official truce. Otherwise, they have no reason to work with us.
Han, did you read how we're going to move?
Oh, yeah. Good luck, hero. I'm afraid our only trained diplomat's going to wait this one out.
What?
Luke heard exclamation points follow Leia's question.
What are you talking about? Excuse us.
Luke pictured Han turning aside, trying to reasonably explain to the more stubborn Skywalker twin... Maybe her brother ought to step in.
Leia, look at the board. Bakura is blockaded. All communications out must be jammed. We haven't heard a peep except some scatter from entertainment bands. You're too valuable to risk in a battle zone.
Oh, and you're not? I have to talk with the governor. Our only hope is to persuade the Bakurans that we're coming in as non-aggressors.
We're not risking you, Luke insisted. Finally, they decided that Leia and Han would head for Bakura's 6th planet... Land there and wait for a rendezvous with Luke. Han Solo kept an eye on the Falcon's sensors as he swung the nimble freighter aside.
He was back where he belonged. Alliance repair teams had wasted no time getting his beloved freighter back into service after Lando Calrissian rattled her around inside the second Death Star. Han belonged in this cockpit with good old Chewie in the co-pilot's seat. But it wasn't the same. Leia sat behind the huge Wookiee, wearing a gray combat coverall belted around her waist, leaning forward as if she thought she ought to be co-pilot instead. Well, he'd give Leia everything he owned, the whole galaxy if he could swing it, but she wouldn't bump Chewie out of that chair. 3PO occupied the other back chair, his golden head swiveling from side to side. Han reached for his control panel. The sixth planet filled the scanner displays. Yeah, dirt and ice, Han translated for Leia. But as they got closer, they discovered that the surface was not water ice, but ammonia, or some other smelly volatile that the hover jets melted even in the planet's super-cold temperature.
Yeah, synchronous orbit, good idea.
Han jabbed a sensor.
Looks like Brother Luke's moving in on the Imperial side. I suppose you want to stick around and watch.
Leia frowned. With this scanner board, it's impossible to tell who's on which side.
Oh.
Was she insulting his scanner board? Oh, Han added cheerfully, realizing that maybe they'd finally have a quiet hour as they waited for Luke. Leia followed Han aft to the cargo bay. Once the battle for Endor wound down, they talked for hours. Beneath that smuggler's cynical mask, this man hid ideals like hers. They'd simply been squashed harder. And she dreaded being alone ever since Luke gave her the terrible news. Darth Vader was her... No. Her mind dodged its own defenses and thrust again. No. She would never accept him as her father. Not even if Luke did. The comlink beeped from Han's shirt pocket.
General Solo, General Solo.
Leia wriggled in Han's arms. I knew it, he muttered. Just when Leia had been on the verge of relaxing, he pulled out the comlink.
What?
Sir, I'm picking up a transmission from near space. A droid control unit of some kind appears to be in operation very close by. I'm not certain, but its source appears to be coming closer.
Uh-oh, Leia said softly against his shoulder. She pushed up to her feet. Han had just swung into the cockpit when an electronic shriek rang out from the main console. What's that? Leia asked.
Not good, sweetheart. We just got probed.
By what? From behind the dead icy bulk of Planet Six, 8 or 9 small shapes appeared in mid-starfield, headed directly for the Falcon.
I'm not sticking around to find out. Chewie! Charge the main guns. Come on, Chewie, you and me for the quad guns. We'll see what they're made of. Leia, take us someplace. Suddenly I don't trust Planet Six.
Leia slid into the pilot's seat. Han climbed up the turret and clambered into his seat, then squeezed off a ranging burst.
You're closing fast, he told Leia via the pickup mic on his headset. Is Goldenrod getting any data? What are they?
Deep space droids, that's all he knows.
The droids swooped into close range. 3 soared over the freighter's asymmetrical dish, firing energy bursts toward its main engine. Han poured firepower into a single droid, holding it steady in his sights for as long as it'd take to implode a full-sized TIE fighter. The thing finally blew. The Falcon rocked as another of the 2 remaining droids fired. Han finally overloaded the upper one's shields. A wave of debris sent its buddy spinning out of sight. Silence.
Got everybody, Chewie?
Breathing heavily, Han scrambled back down to the cockpit and swung into his seat with a flourish.
We're gone.
Leia crossed her arms. For all the protection I've gotten, we might as well be doing Luke some good.
Well, strap down, sweetheart. We're gonna hustle.
Motionless but for his eyes, Luke glanced from viewscreen to BAC unit. Evidently, his battle group had dropped back out of hyperspace at the moment when the Suruk meant to press their advantage to Bakura's surface. That meant the aliens had thinned their outer arc to push forward, creating an area Luke's small force ought to be able to take easily. Luke keyed the comm.
Gold Leader, Rogue One, that's yours.
Got it, Flurry.
Wedge Antilles sounded confident and experienced. Gold and Rogue Squadron soared in, confounding the aliens' rear guard with a full-speed sweep.
Luke stretched out with his feelings, barely aware of his body. He tried reaching for alien presences, but couldn't find any. As Wedge closed on a tiny enemy fighter, Luke braced himself. Something that small might be just a remote, a drone. Or the aliens could be elfin-sized. Wedge scored. Something weak and inexplicably putrid shrieked in momentary anguish, then fizzled away and died. Luke choked down his gag reflex. Had he felt two presences cry out? He drummed his fingers. The enemy fighters weren't true drone ships then, but piloted. Sort of. Something had died. Miniature Siruk fighters had almost surrounded Wedge and his squadron. Luke fought down panic and funneled his emotional energy into the force around and inside him. He stretched out his own point of presence toward the tiny alien ship dead ahead of Wedge's X-Wing. Touching it, he clearly sensed two almost human presences on board the small fighter. Luke brushed each presence, focusing on the second one. Its misery goaded him to despair. Fear, anger, aggression. The dark side, are they? Yoda had taught him that his methods were as critical as his motives. If he used dark power, even in self-defense, the cost to his soul might be disastrous. He relaxed into the Force. Clinging to control for the sake of his soul and his sanity, he amplified the pitiful will. It had lived once, free. With all the intensity of the doomed, it longed to go on living. Luke planted a suggestion in reply. But a good death is better than life enslaved to hatred, and peace is better than anguish. With startling suddenness, the alien ship altered course directly for one of its squadron mates. It accelerated to ram. Luke wrenched free of the other human's will and sat gasping. Wedge's X-Wing shot out of danger through the gap created by the two alien ships' destruction. The flurry itself rocked under heavy bombardment. Manchisco's gunners had picked off a swarm of tiny fighters, but behind them came more alien ships. The flurry rocked again. Bridge lights blinked. All squadrons! Flurry needs reinforcements, Luke called. Something shimmered mid-battle, the asymmetrical dish of a freighter, dropping out of hyperspace amid the swarm of alien fighters. An alien ship strayed into its line of fire. No more ship.
Figured you needed some help,
said a familiar voice in Luke's ears. Thanks, Ant, he murmured. Nice of you to drop by. Fighter after enemy fighter fled past the flurry for open space. Red warning lights turned amber.
How many do you owe me now, Junior?
Several, Luke answered. Imperial Commander Thanis, whose ships had dropped back, was busy behind the flurry. Luke watched with relief as cluster after cluster of the alien fighters and ships vanished.
That's it. We're done for now.
Luke turned to his communications officer.
Get the out-system scanners up, Delcus. It's my guess they're not going far.
Imperial Bakurin Senator Gariel Captison sat wriggling her toes and making patterns out of keys on her inset touchboard. Under a tiled ceiling that rose to a point above its center, the chamber of the Imperial Bakurin Senate lay silent, except for a soft trickle from the translucent rain pillars at its corners. Roof gutters channeled rainwater into the pillars. Lit from below, they shimmered with the liquid pulse of Bakura's biosphere.
All rise!
Barked the voice near the chamber's door. Gary stood with 39 other senators. Imperial Governor Wylek Nereus strode in, flanked by four black-helmeted naval troopers. Taller than any of them, Governor Nereus wore a specially designed uniform, heavy on braid and gold piping, and skin-tight black gloves that had given him a reputation for being fastidious.
I won't keep you, Nereus said, looking down his long nose. I realize you are busy keeping your sectors pacified.
Gary frowned. Her district's residents were abandoning their jobs to dig shelters, but at least bunker blasting was productive. She glanced at her uncle, Prime Minister Jorg Captison. Here in Salisdar, the Bakurin capital, Captison had been quelling riots using Bakurin police to keep Nereus from sending out stormtroopers from the garrison. Nereus raised a gloved hand to silence murmurers. Once he had their attention, he slowly turned his head and cleared his throat.
Rebel Alliance ships have arrived in the Bakura system.
That gave her a rain-cold shock. Rebels? The Empire allowed no dissent. After Bakura entered the Empire 3 years ago, two minor rebellions had been efficiently quashed.
Gary remembered too much of that period. Both her parents had died, caught in the wrong place during a running battle between insurgents and Imperial troops. Could Nereus's forces protect Bakura from rebel raiders and the Siruk?
The Dominant, our only remaining cruiser, sustained heavy damages. On the advice of my staff, I've ordered our forces to withdraw from the main battle and protect Bakura itself. I request your confirmation of that order.
Senior Senator Orne Belden straightened his back.
Covering your tracks, Governor. So if anything else goes wrong, you can finger us.
It wasn't wise to attract an Imperial Governor's attention, but Belden seemed fearless. Abruptly distracted, Gary checked the time. She had promised Senator Belden that she'd visit his elderly wife this evening. Fiery little Eppy's mind was eroding at only 132 years old. Eppy had been Gary's first real grown-up friend. Nereus smiled blandly and responded to Belden's challenge.
The action I have ordered merely ensures that the rebels will not strike at Bakura.
Prime Minister Capitason stood. Like the Senate, the Prime Minister had lost authority every time he crossed Imperial wishes.
Let us support Governor Nereus, he said without enthusiasm, and confirm his withdrawal order.
He called the vote. Gary extended an open palm with the majority. Only Belden and two others closed their fists.
Thank you for your support, Nereus purred.
Luke joined Han and Leia on the Millennium Falcon, leaving Captain Manchisco in command of the Flurry. The Alliance ships were cleared to defend the defense web surrounding Bakura. To prove we're with them by sharing their danger, said Leia. After receiving assurances of safe conduct from the Imperials, the negotiation party in the Millennium Falcon made its way down to the stunning Azure world. Leia peered between Han and Chewie's seats at the scanner display. Between Twin Rivers, an enormous outcrop of pure white rock sparkled in low-angle light. It dazzled Leia's eyes. At a bend in the outcrop, an entire city sat perched on its width. The Falcon touched down softly in the spaceport south of the city. Leia positioned herself in the center of the group with Luke on her right, Han on her left, and Chewie behind them with 3PO and R2. Chewie dropped the entry ramp. They strode to meet the Imperial group beside its shuttle. The tall man at the center of the group had to be Imperial Governor Wylik Nereus. The other individuals in his group kept shifting positions in order to watch him. He was absolutely in charge. They bowed formally to each other.
In the name of the Emperor, welcome to Bakura, the governor intoned.
Leia couldn't have hoped for a better opening than that protocol greeting. Thank you for your welcome, Governor Nereus. You may think me terribly rude to correct your kind words, but it's no longer valid to welcome us in Emperor Palpatine's name. Emperor Palpatine died several days ago. He was killed by his apprentice, Darth Vader.
Vader.
Nereus straightened several millimeters to loom over her.
His Imperial Majesty should never have trusted a Sith Lord. I was prepared to disbelieve you, Your Highness, but Vader as an assassin, I believe.
Lord Vader is dead as well, Your Excellency. Luke's chin rose at the edge of her vision. She knew what he wanted her to add. Maybe Vader had died heroically, but 10 minutes' contribution did not make up for years of atrocities. The governor's people turned aside in pairs to whisper. Leia seized the initiative and presented the others.
Commander Skywalker,
Nereus repeated. She introduced Luke.
Ah, now I recognize your name, Commander. You might know that for some years there has been an astronomical reward offered for your capture. Alive only. That must be something of a distinction among rebel forces.
Yes, I'm aware. This was nothing new to Luke. They were all on the most wanted docket.
And I see two droids. They'll have to be equipped with restraining bolts for the duration of their stay on Bakura.
Fitting droids with those bolts was standard procedure on most planets, compulsory on Imperial worlds and battle stations. We'll see to it, Leia agreed. Governor, Alliance forces intercepted your call for assistance. The Imperial fleet is no longer a presence in this part of the galaxy. We're here to assist you in repelling the invaders. Once that is accomplished, we will leave you. Bakura must choose its own destiny. Governor Nereus gave her a chilling half-smile.
As Leia and Governor Nereus continued a guarded conversation, Luke stretched out and opened himself toward them. Leia, calm and poised. The governor, a facade of manners, the compulsion to dominate, and, underlying both, a gut-wrenching sense of terror. Surely not of us. Luke thought of the despondent, not-quite-human presences on that Siruvi fighter ship and realized the governor could easily jump into the Alliance camp. Temporarily.